Hello, and welcome to another episode of Must-See Matches, the essentials of pro wrestling, as nominated by you. I am Kieran Laforte, and I'm joined, as always, by the ace of Must-See Matches, Mark Buckley. Mark, how's it going?
I'm very good. I've had a goodish week, good weekend, except for managing to break a pepper pot and having to hoover it because everyone was sneezing because of the pepper. How that happened to me, I don't know.
It's like a Marx Brothers gag. Well, I can't possibly segue from that, so I'm just going to barrel on. Our match this week is Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kazuchika Okada from Invasion Attack 2013, not on the 4th of July, as I initially thought, but on the 7th of April 2013 in Sumo Hall. And returning to join us to talk about this match, the mighty Strigger from Eastern Lariat and Cage Matches here. Strigger, how are you?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me. But I'm only here to listen to how Mark butchers his Twitter handle this time. So I'm excited.
He's been really good up until like a couple of weeks ago. And yeah. Then there was a slip.
And the problem with the slip was because we've recorded these in weird combination, I had no clue when my streak was broken.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, we've had to record things in a strange order due to our various schedules. I couldn't even tell you what episode that was on.
It was the EMLL Lucha episode.
Oh, right. So as of recording this, nobody else has heard that episode yet. But when this comes out, that will have been last week. Isn't time travel fun?
It's great, yeah.
So no time travel involved here. Well, I guess it is a bit. We're going back 10 years. Importantly for us with this match, we are now in the next bracket of nominations. We're in the what I call the not quite 9%ers. These matches scored 8.93% of nominations. And from here until the end, these brackets just get smaller. There are no more than three matches per bracket between now and our final episode. Whereas previously, you know, like tons of stuff scored 5%, tons of stuff scored 4%. And now we're getting to the big boys, so to speak. So, where do we start? We've discussed Tanahashi and Okada before, obviously. We have discussed them having a match before. I believe that one was from 2016. That was Dome 2016, wasn't it?
Wrestle Kingdom 10's main event. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you have anything to add about their stats or whatnot?
What I'll say is this is the last time we will discuss Mr. Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Oh, really?
On the podcast. And for me, all of the previous matches we've covered, I described as must-see. So it'll be interesting whether I think this one is must-see as well.
See if he keeps up the streak.
So Okada has three left. And the interesting thing about that is the three he has left are all in the top 15. Mm. And only Misawa and Kobashi have as many matches in the top 15 as Okada does.
Oh, rarefied company.
Yeah.
Rarefied company indeed. Mm. And also, we've had five Tanahashi versus Okada matches nominated, and it is the joint most nominated match, as in that combination of wrestlers. Okay. The one that's tied with it was Kobashi versus Misawa, which shouldn't surprise people. And the ones that were behind it on four versions of this match were Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat, and, oh, it's that guy again, Omega versus Okada.
Out of interest, would you have to hand like the dates of the other Okada Tanahashi matches that were nominated? Because they had four in this year alone.
Yeah. So it was, I think, the Rainmaker Shock.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2012.
That was 2012. I don't think there was another one from 2013 that was nominated. Give me a quick second, because I don't have that to hand, but I can find it very quickly.
I think you previously said that the G1 matches did not get nominated.
You have a better memory for our show than we do.
I recently listened to those episodes specifically in preparation. Yes. The G1 matches actually are quite underrated. They had three time limit draws because the story just was they can't do it in another 30.
Yeah, yeah, that was right. They were good sort of like, as far as I remember, like middle chapter of a story type matches.
Right, yeah.
Like perhaps standalone they wouldn't get voted for, but if this was must-see feuds or must-see rivalries, like there's every chance we'd be talking about those matches.
Yeah. So I was wrong. The other ones that were nominated were the Rainmaker Shock in 2012. Mm-hmm. King of Pro Wrestling in this year, 2013. So that was October. Mm-hmm. Wrestle Kingdom 9 and Wrestle Kingdom 10.
Impressive. So something I particularly liked about this was the opening video package tells you the story, even if you understand no Japanese. Okada had his chance at Tanahashi's title at the Dome in January and lost. In February, Tanahashi successfully defended again, this time against Carl Anderson, while Okada couldn't put away Minoru Suzuki. But in March, Okada refocused and ripped through the New Japan Cup, beating Archer, Anderson, Yano and Goto to earn his title shot. And now in April, he's got another crack at summiting the mountain. Simple booking. Wrestling doesn't need to be complicated.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we are at the point in time where this is really a crossroads in Japanese pro wrestling, I would really say. New Japan already was on a very high level. Mm. But going back 10 years, they weren't as far away from all other Japanese companies as they are now in comparison to that. And I think that those rivalries in these years that they put on, especially, of course, the Tanahashi and Okada one, was very, very crucial in their meteoric rise in the mid 2010s, because when you specifically take a look at the crowd that was watching this match, you could see a lot of people that were incredibly focused and were absolutely into anything that Okada and Tanahashi would do in this match.
Yeah, this is near the beginning of what was essentially like a 5-year, like, can't miss period.
Yeah.
Like, you had to watch every show, or the big shows at least. New Japan World doesn't exist yet, so you've got to, like, buy it on pay-per-view or find some dubious way to get hold of it.
I think this show was on Ustream.
I
think I watched it on Ustream. At that point, I was still studying, and I had a friend who already had a credit card who could buy the show on Ustream, and he would watch these shows live and then forward me the link to his Ustream, and I would watch it later on.
It's good to know people.
The point I want to come back, because Strigger said that just around this time, the gap between New Japan and everyone else wasn't that big. Wrestle Kingdom 7, which was in 2013, was the first of the Wrestle Kingdom branded Tokyo Dome shows that didn't have an All Japan Noah or TNA wrestler in a big singles match.
Right, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Keiji Muto would carry a lot of those early ones.
Yep. So Keiji Muto, you had the likes of Keiji Muto, Rob Van Dam, Jeff Hardy in his infamously awful match, which was the one where he was wrestling after he jumped over a burning Christmas tree and burned his ass on it. I love that fact, because it just, yep, Jeff Hardy's been absolutely moron
for
a long
time. What a bonker.
And this show, not this show, the Wrestle Kingdom 7, you had Laughter 7 in two big, important feeling singles matches.
Yeah, so, very controversial at the time.
Oh, very controversial.
Yeah, because they're shit.
What? No, you're thinking of the Gracies.
Wait, no. Laughter 7 is Sakuraba
and
yeah,
Shibata.
I hate him. He sucks. Fight me.
Okay.
I think he's terrible.
Who, Shibata or Sakuraba?
Sakuraba is an awful pro wrestler. I can't stand watching him. He looks like he's not taking anything seriously.
I guess that's part of his gig.
Like, it worked. It kind of, Minoru Suzuki made that work. To me, Sakuraba has never made that work. We're going to get hate mail, and I'm going to love it. I'm going to be the heel. I hate Sakuraba.
Fine. This is going to be the hill you die on, okay?
I did not expect this. I kind of get it, but I did not expect it.
And the Sakuraba versus the Gracie stuff was absolute dog
shit.
Oh,
yeah. That was, the Gracie stuff was terrible.
Yeah.
Speaking of terrible, we'll quickly mention this show, Invasion Attack, had a quote, triple main event.
I noticed that on the match graphic.
So the one under this was Nakamura against Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Right.
The one under that was a NWA title match with Satoshi Kojima challenging Rob Conway.
Good Lord.
Yes.
I thought for a horrible second you were going to say it was the Big Daddy Yum Yum match.
No, this is pure Bruce Farpdes period new NWA.
Good Lord.
But the entire deal of these invasion attacks shows used to be the NWA coming in and defending their championships on these bigger shows.
Yeah.
Well, it was also because Invasion Attack was actually the name of one of the card packs for the King of Pro Wrestling card game. So that's why you had Invasion Attack and King of Pro Wrestling, which were the April and the October Super Hall shows, and they were both named after essentially card booster packs.
I think the card packs I've got are King of Pro Wrestling. I bought a couple of boxes of them on one of my trips before they discontinued them. Oh, we went through them, didn't we, on a DDT, because I found out I've got a Michael Nakazawa card in there. There's a shiny foil Okada one, and you know, some really nice stuff, like some really nice ones on the moves and that kind of thing. Mm. And then right down the bottom, there's Michael Nakazawa.
On the topic of discontinuing stuff, they discontinued Invasion Attack after 2016 because they ran out of invasions.
They ran out of invaders who wanted to attack.
Because the NWA affiliation died off. And just looking at these cards of 2015-16, and there basically is this Gracie and Sakuraba stuff, and there's AJ Styles and Kota Ibushi on the Invasion Attack 2015. But after that, there isn't really any invasion.
Yeah, and they kind of decided they'd like to keep those two.
Yeah.
And then nobody else was invited back. This is Tanahashi's sixth reign with the title. He's defended it 7 times so far and is coming up on 300 days as champion after beating Okada for it at Dominion in June the year prior. Mm. I did a bit of hold up Google Translate for the text, the subtitles on the promos, which wigged out at Tanahashi's one. But Okada at the press con says, "I'm sure everyone is thinking again, but I guess that means it's only me that can stand up to Tanahashi." And then you get a shot of them like facing off in Korakuen Hall. That's where Okada says that his loss was a miracle. And Tanahashi responds, "Because miracles can happen over and over again, I think you can rely on the ace."
Oh, that's pure Tanahashi cheese.
Yeah. So Gedo says this is the final piece needed to fully restore the Rainmaker, and history is about to change. And then the final text that comes up in red says, "Tonight will be a miraculous night," which is followed by them misspelling Tanahashi's name on the match graphic. Money, yells the commentator as Okada comes down the aisle with the money fluttering all around him. I really noticed they nailed superstar look early with Okada.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
The gold, red and black, the theme, the falling cash, like the one bit I love is he throws off a massive robe to reveal another robe underneath.
Yeah.
Who else does that?
Oh, the one thing is that, especially in the higher quality, the mass of gold stuff from his chest doesn't exactly look perfect, and it also makes him look like he's a bit of a human magpie, or if he just stole only gold stuff instead of doing the Don Fuji steal everything.
Nice to shoehorn a Don Fuji reference into this one as well. Great stuff. Yeah, I noticed that the reigning money was there, and I noticed also that the fans were trying to collect that these notes. While when Tanahashi came out, everybody stormed to the guardrail to just high five the guy.
That was So that was the kind of what I noticed. Like Okada kind of ignores the crowd and goes straight to the ring to show himself off to them. So this is his night. It's all about him. Tanahashi is the rock star man of the people. Big smile, slapping hands with everyone. Yeah. He even stops in front of someone with a sign for him to acknowledge them. It's similar to the Flair and Steamboat dynamic and energy, but not played up as overtly.
Mm.
Like, whereas that was like on television, they were outright telling you, "We have two different lifestyles." This is just played out through character in front of the camera. And I think much like Flair and Steamboat, none of that matters, because if you just put them in the ring in black trunks, they would still have a phenomenal match, probably in their sleep. Two things. I think if Okada was going around stealing things, he should have stolen the business card for a different barber, because by the end of this, it looked like the monster from The Thing was trying to break out of the top of his head. And it doesn't do Tanahashi's credibility any favors to have Captain fucking New Japan as his corner man. Hideous Saito.
Has
any man had three gimmicks in a shorter period of time and all of them been as terrible as Hideo Saito / Captain New Japan / Bone Soldier?
I was going to bring up Big Boss Shimizu / King Shimizu / Ryotsu Shimizu / Boktimo Dragon, but he's terrible. He's not terrible.
No, yeah. He's not at all. I was watching him yesterday, in fact. He's wonderful. So Okada tries his patronizing clean break, but Tanahashi's not going to be disrespected like that. So they roll a couple of reversals along the rope into the corner, where Okada just does it anyway and then backs off into the middle of the ring into the Rainmaker pose. And Tanahashi decides he's really not going to be disrespected like that and just charges out and boots him in the stomach.
It's just a really nice opening, because it just shows that it's all about neither of them want to get shown up here.
No, absolutely not. So Okada wrestles his way out of a headlock into one of his own and then flattens Tanahashi when he shoots him off. They do a little bit of waist lock reversing and Tanahashi takes a swipe at a Rainmaker, but Okada ducks it and is out of there as the champ plays his air guitar and Rainmaker poses himself. It's like, oh, you can be a cocky bastard. I'm just as much of a cocky bastard as you are.
Absolutely great opening. And this was followed by the boot to the face. To respond to the air guitar of Tanahashi.
Yeah.
One of the best big boots I think I've seen for a while.
Yeah. Tanahashi has a couple of comeback attempts foiled, but manages to grab like a wacky gutame takedown and decides he's going to go after the arms to stop the Rainmaker lariat. He's already abandoned being man of the people good guy and just stomps all over Okada's arms as he's underneath the ropes. He takes Okada's right arm and the simplest thing, just slams it really hard into the mat a couple of times. And I think that, combined with Okada basically sitting up, grabbing it and screaming, like really put over how much this hurt.
Yeah. What I like, though, is that before Tanahashi started targeting the arm, he'd gone to dropkick the knee, and Okada did this cocky leg out of the way dodge, which he also did in the Wrestle Kingdom 10 match, actually.
That's one of those parts of these match series that's really, really great. And that is why you really should watch these not as standalone matches, not out of context. You should watch them in full context, which I did. For the last time that we talked about this, I watched all of these matches just to be right there where Mark just was.
I wish I had the time.
And I love this sub-story that Okada knows what Tanahashi's doing now. Okada's got Tanahashi dialed in. So Tanahashi understands that pretty quickly and completely changes his strategy. Has Tanahashi ever really done arm focus? Because that's not what you Tanahashi.
The standard like Tanahashi run is go for the legs so I can get the Texas Cloverleaf on so they can't stand up when I try and splash them. Simple. Yeah. But here, he's having to immediately change his strategy.
I remember at that point in time, these matches were wildly greatly received on Twitter and overall in the internet. Mm. But I remember that there were some people that criticized Tanahashi and Okada for the reason that they would do arm work and leg work based matches. And I never really got around to understand that, because that is very obvious with these two that you would go for the limbs. I mean, what else would you work over if a guy has a clothesline as a finisher?
Well, yes, I understand that. Okada here, he's working more on the neck. He spikes Tanahashi with a DDT on the apron. He does, I don't know what he was thinking, a crap cross-arm neckbreaker thing. And then possibly my favorite bit of the whole match, decides he's going to try a double arm chicken wing while Tanahashi is sitting down, but also flip over him into a bridge. And I might have to GIF this and put it up because I can't think of a better way to describe it. But it looks so painful and has to be seen.
On the other hand, please don't, otherwise you'll be flagged on Twitter.
Oh, I'll do it in black and white and backwards and put it through AI or something.
This was so fantastic. Like, Okada went for this bridge 4 times. Before it eventually worked out and the fans start laughing.
He gets it done anyways.
And then he has this look on his face where he says, "Ah, see what I did?"
Yeah. Yeah, he finally, on the fourth time, like, Sumo Hall starts laughing, and that kind of spurs him on to try harder.
Yeah.
And he finally gets over that. I counted on the sixth attempt. And he breaks into this brilliantly smug face. And then when he eventually lets go, he just casually turns to the nearest camera and gives it a thumbs up.
it brings me back the whole laughing thing. I was at John Moxley's New Japan debut.
Mm-hmm.
I was there live, and I remember seeing lots of people really happy and enjoyed the Moxley versus Juice Robinson match. But because I was there live, I heard the people laughing at half the plunder spots because they thought it was so stupid that they were actually laughing at some of the spots.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a New Japan thing, is it? Like, weapons brawls aren't New Japan matches. So we have a short section where Okada remembers he's a Toriumon trainee and starts applying lots of wacky lucha holds, mostly, again, to soften up the champion's neck.
So this was wonderful. Like, this followed this section where he tried to do the butterfly lock bridge. Mm. And then immediately he goes into this transition. We often talk about these submissions that Okada tried to get over in his career. But he rolls through a Lamaistral roll right into the deep in depth.
Yes.
I thought this looked tremendous. I watched it 2 or 3 times. This was possibly the best attempt at a hold that Okada ever did.
I also think it's possibly his best submission.
It is.
Yeah.
Like, Red Ink is fine. It's just essentially an STF, but I quite like Deep in Debt. Deep in Debt looks like difficult to get out of. Although it does leave an arm free for, you know, you would think the best submission holds would be ones that tie up all the limbs and the guy has no hope of escaping. In kayfabe, yes, but in real life, the best submission hold leaves some way for the opponent to get out.
I
really like Deep in Debt. It's kind of like a modified crossface, isn't it? He's got legs wrapped around one arm and then kind of like a cravat on the head.
Right.
Yeah. So Tanahashi decides he's out of wrestling options at this point and just kicks away at Okada's arm. But the third one is stopped and he finds himself flying through the air on the end of his own move, the Dragon Screw. He ends up on the outside and Okada just uses the railing to beat him up. The particularly nasty bit I liked was he put his head through one of the gaps and pulled his neck back over the railing.
Yeah.
And when Red Shoes told him to break, he just kicks the railing further down so it hits Tanahashi in the back of the head.
Yeah.
Nasty. Tanahashi escapes a tombstone on the floor, though. He runs Okada into the barrier himself and repeatedly smashes the arm into the ring post before crushing him with the high fly body press off the top. And the camera shot here makes it look like he fell out of a plane. It's beautiful.
Great, and the other thing with this shot is you realize that because of how narrow that gap between the guardrail and the apron is, he had maybe 6 inches of wiggle room between his head and his feet. And it's just fantastic. Also fantastic, the pink trainers on one of the photographers.
I didn't notice that. So, back inside, Tanahashi squashes Okada with a crossbody in the corner and hits a lovely flying forearm. And now he's all fired up and he's punishing that arm more to the point where when Okada tries to use it for a forearm smash, he is the one who collapses in pain.
Yeah, that was great.
The champion gets too full of himself, though, and tries a rope run that Okada is ready for and gets put down with a flapjack that he takes on his face. Air raid crash over the knee that needs a better name than reverse neckbreaker drop, and then switches his elbow pad from his left arm over to the right one that's been worked over, and score. I love Okada's form on his top rope elbow drops. It's like he hangs there for 10 seconds. He has time. He basically jumps, raises one arm, and then switches to the one he's going to drop, while he's still in the air and is just sort of hanging like a cartoon character. And then, with apologies to Pac, gravity remembers him and he hits the elbow drop. It's really nice.
And I really love that detail with like taking the elbow pad off and putting it on the injured elbow. And Okada's selling, even at this early stage, is great.
And it got a great reaction from the crowd as well, because once again, the camera crew was right there because they had a full close-up of Okada changing the other pad.
I've been saying it for years. As someone who has made wrestling television, New Japan's camera crew are the best. It's very rare they miss anything. They are exceptional at what they do. Swapping the elbow pad didn't really help, though. It still hurt, apparently. Yeah. And when he tries to follow up with the Rainmaker pose, can only manage it with one arm. And we're going to praise the camera crew again. In a lovely detail, the camera zooms out much slower than usual rather than the normal snap zoom.
So fantastic. This was one of the most iconic moments of the early Tanahashi and Okada matches.
Tanahashi, he's not stupid. He knows a Rainmaker is coming and manages to fire off an elbow. Okada also can't hold him up for a tombstone, so Tana gets a couple of slaps in before having his head taken off with one of those perfect drop kicks. And I was like, Tanahashi is like 5'10", 5'11", and you can see it's shot from the hard cam, and Okada, you can see, is like his entire top half is above Tanahashi's head before he's got his feet out for the drop kick. He jumps ridiculously high. Okada fights hard to get red ink on, the SDF variation we were talking about, and we were specifically shown Toru Yano tapping out to that in the VTR that ran before. But he can't get on because of the bad arm. Heavy rain gets turned into a sling blade and both are down before Tanahashi comes rocketing out the corner with a drop kick, followed by a straight jacket suplex for a near fall that had Sumo Hall on their feet.
When do you see Tanahashi hit a drop kick? That's what I want to say.
Yeah, it's quite rare. I'll tell you what I really enjoyed about this. Seeing Tanahashi still able to move.
Yeah.
Like watching his AEW appearances earlier this year, it's so sad watching him try and get around now. Like, he doesn't leave his feet on the sling blade anymore. His sling blade is now worse than Britt Baker's, and that's saying something. But here, he's like, I know he was, this is 10 years ago, and he was already broken, but he could still, like.
He could still run. At this point in his career, he is not able to do anymore.
No. So here's a Falcon.
Go back to the red ink spot in this match specifically, because I think that the red ink that Okada used is completely useless. It didn't fit Okada at all, because you mentioned it. He's such a lengthy guy. The guy is 6'3", and Tanahashi is 5'11", and Okada always is the taller guy on these submissions, and it always looked so weird when he put on the red ink, because he had basically to bend over to make it look like it would in any way or shape or form hurt. But luckily here we had Red Shoes, who was working extremely hard to put over that this hold was actually doing damage, because he was making all his dramatic faces.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll get more of those later on.
I actually did really like that for this bit. The hold was never actually applied because Tanahashi's grabbing the hands and and even when Okada's struggling to maintain his grip, and this is not the first time that Okada's hands come into play. As a great detail.
Tanahashi hits a Falcon Arrow, heads up to the top, but gets drop kicked off to the floor. Again, he gets whipped into the barrier. He gets kicked over into the front row and gets brought back with a draping DDT. Barely beats the count back in and runs immediately into a high angle heavy rain, but kicks out. He's grabbed for the Rainmaker, and again he escapes and tries to batter the arm. He also knows to avoid the dropkick this time. Misses a sling blade, blocks a Rainmaker.
He blocked the Rainmaker with a double Polish hammer, by the way.
yes, that's true. He tries for a Dragon Suplex, but Okada slips out of that and hits the Rainmaker, but goes down clutching his arm. This next section I really like. So Tanahashi hasn't moved. He's clearly been rocked by this, but it takes an aged for Okada to get over because of the pain in his arm, and it's only a spasm on instinct that gets Tanahashi's shoulders off the mat so he's not pinned. It's a brilliant way to put over the power of Okada's finisher, but also reinforce the damage that's been done to his arm. And it was only wrestler's instinct that stopped Tanahashi losing his title. Wonderful. It's a weird comedic segue. It reminded me of, have you seen the video of Liger going around the hotel pinning wrestlers while they're asleep?
Yep.
Yeah. It made me think of that because a lot of them, they kind of wake up and register on to what's happening and automatically like put a shoulder up.
Has Sushin Liger ever been the Ironman Heavy Metal Champion? He should have.
He should have.
He just needs to go into the right hotel. But also, I don't want him. I went to his retirement. I don't want him to ever unretire because that completely invalidates my trip.
I don't think he will.
So Okada gets up, but Tanahashi is still stationary. Like Okada can't even pick him up. And we get a great shot of this maniacal grin that crosses Okada's face. He's like, as much as his arm hurts, he has hurt the veteran and he knows he's going to win.
Yeah.
Tanahashi, though, rolls a tombstone into a clutch pin, but Okada rolls it back over and uses it as a setup to get into the red ink.
Yeah.
It's a thing he's been trying to get this whole match. It's really slick as well.
It's ridiculous that he's at his best doing his stupid finishes when he's doing it in an even more convoluted way to set it up. If it's a normal setup, he just can't do it. If it's got something weird and wacky beforehand, then he can do it.
In something that I am slightly scared would take us off on a long tangent, I would like to see the sliding doors of Okada sticks within the Dragon System.
Ooh.
What would that be like? So all the same Toriumon and Dragon Gate, everybody from Toriumon X onwards is like still there. All of the graduates, like nothing changes. He can still fight Shingo Takagi, but it's in Dragon Gate and it's not in New Japan. What kind of wrestler is Kazuchika Okada Dragon Gate edition? Like, as you said, he's 6'3". Can you imagine him doing speedy rope running spots with Yoshino?
No, I really can't. But right
he'd
now
be a hell of a base for the little ones, though, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would. Right now they have this Takuma Nishikawa guy.
Ah, TN Revolution.
Revolution, right. But I'm just browsing the Dragon Gate website to find out how tall the guy actually is. He looks quite tall, but that's of course in reference to the Dragon Gate roster.
Yeah, and for people who are unfamiliar, Dragon Gate wrestlers in general are even smaller than average Japanese wrestlers. A big guy in Dragon Gate is 5'9". So someone like Shingo Takagi or Big Boss Shimizu or Cyber Kong, what was his name? Takashi Yoshida. Like they top out at like 5'9". And just bulk up.
For reference, I'm going to back to the metric system here for
That's
a
fine.
While. So Okada is 191 centimeters tall, while Nishikawa, TN Revolution, he is 183. So
okay. So he's just slightly taller than Tanahashi then.
Yeah. So that's a guy who is at this point in time the new big guy, quote-unquote, in Dragon Gate. But with Okada, he would completely break the system, I think. If he was in Dragon Gate, I think you'd have to rethink every big Dragon Gate main event from the past 10 years if Okada had been in. And the thing about Okada is, you mentioned the presentation, the gimmick, and what was put behind it, the effort and production that was put behind it. While I love Dragon Gate, I don't think that they would have created the Rainmaker to the degree that New Japan Pro Wrestling was able to.
No, he would have been like a giant wrestling parking attendant or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
And also bear in mind when Okada struggled on his return at Wrestle Kingdom, New Japan put everything behind trying to trying to fix the problem.
We talked about that previously, didn't we? Like, he has Gedo as his manager. So he's got the booker as his manager. He's high up the card. So Red Shoes is always the referee. He's working with the best wrestlers in the world. He was given every opportunity to become a star.
Whereas at that period in Dragon Gate, he's got Shima in the locker room.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
It would still, at this point in time, be a running gag that people would get on the mic and Kirk and Holland point at Okada and say, you sucked at your debut.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Back on topic?
Yeah, let's get back to Sumo Hall, who are going bananas for a B-level submission hold. But like Tanahashi is trying to fight it, and as he gets close to the ropes, Okada turns up the pressure by turning his head to one side and shifting his grip, so he's cranking on the neck.
But the great bit about shifting the grip is when he first had the hold, he had his fingers interlaced. When he shifts the grip, his right hand is holding nothing. All of the grip is his good left hand gripping his right as hard as possible because he's unable to maintain a strong grip with that injured hand. Fantastic detail.
Yes. And also one more fantastic detail about these big title matches that New Japan put on. Right at the 25-minute point, this was a couple of minutes before the part we're just in right now, they show the close-up of the title belt ringside. This is a great motive that was picked up by other promotions like WXW in Germany, for example, a couple of years after that as well, because you knew whenever they showed the title belt, this was crunch time.
Yeah, it's something New Japan have done for years and years and years. It's usually while both men are down, like selling exhaustion, they will crossfade to the belt sitting on the desk and then crossfade to a wide shot of them both like laying in the ring. Yeah, it's good for reinforcing the stakes, like showing like this is what this is all about. This is what these two men have been fighting so hard for.
Reinforcing the stakes and also reinforcing your interest level because we've been over that. These big Okada matches, they have the tendency to just be whatever they are for the first 50 to 20 minutes. But you know, there is Okada speeding it up and there is the title belt close up. So, you know, okay, we're getting back into action.
So Tanahashi manages to collapse into the ropes to force a break. Okada continues to run elbows into his neck, but has a running one in the corner avoided. And it looks like he's setting Tanahashi up to drop kick him off the top to the floor again. But Tanahashi kicks him away. And as he grabs the top rope to steady himself with his injured right arm, Tanahashi dives off into it with a double axe handle from the ropes.
Great stuff. Yeah. This was a thing that Tanahashi did a lot in these matches with Okada, that he had the most simple counter to the more convoluted top rope dropkick that Okada used to do. Tanahashi would just simply kick him. That was it. simple kick to the chest. That's it. Yeah. That's like children fighting on the playground and just one guy just kicks the knees off the other one. That's the level.
So he hits the high fly crossbody again, sling blade, dragon suplex for a series of huge pops and a close two count.
And he's really on the cusp of winning at this point. You mentioned that Okada was so confident that he would put away Tanahashi. But here, we are going back to the Tokyo Dome, and we're going back to Okada nearly losing to Hiroshi Tanahashi once again, and it just kept getting more dramatic.
It's time for the patented big finish. It's the high fly flow to the back, and then he rolls him over, goes for one to the front, and gets nothing but knees directly on the 30-minute call.
Yeah. And it's not like just the knees were hurting for Okada, because this was one of the better tropes of the high fly flows missing. It wasn't only that Tanahashi would suffer from it, but his opponents, of course, would suffer from them as well. I mean, you know, Tanahashi is a big guy. Him landing on your knees has to hurt like hell. And it's not only the knees here, it's also Okada's back that's hurting from this high fly flow.
However, Tanahashi has spent 15 to 20 minutes working on the arm and not the legs as he would normally do.
Yep.
Okada clobbers Tanahashi between the shoulder blades with a drop kick, but neither of them can get the advantage on a tombstone. Tanahashi hangs onto the arm to twice evade attempts at the Rainmaker and gets Okada up for the tombstone, but it's reversed and he gets planted. Okada screams to the heavens, pulls him up, one more Rainmaker, 1, 2, 3, he's the champion again.
Yes.
Well, quickly,
yes.
That tombstone, Okada did not have his hands clasped. He had his left arm grabbing and holding onto his right wrist. So even then, on the finish, his right arm is still not strong enough to hit the tombstone normally, so he has to change how he hits the tombstone.
It's quite funny you've become a hand fetishist on this episode.
Don't put that into the universe, please.
Yeah, this finishing sequence was just wonderful with all the escapes and the sheer desperation that Tanahashi had on his face as he was slowly but surely put back into the tombstone hold. This was just wonderful. He was able to duck the Rainmaker once, winds up in the tombstone again, though, and then that's the Rainmaker, that's it. That was fantastic.
I would presume by your appearance on this episode, Strigger, you're a big fan of this match.
I'm a big fan of this match. I'm a big fan of this match series. When I was asked by Mark to come on the show, I was wondering how well this match would hold up. I watched it for the second time in, I think, 1 year now. I think I've overall watched this match 5 or 6 times now. I'm still debating which one my favorite is. I'm thinking that I like the King of Pro Wrestling one in that year just a bit better than the April Invasion Attack one. But until that point, this was my definite match of the year candidate for that year. And I think in the end, it turned out to be the wet match that I chose for my match of the year. And it held up quite well. Although, I don't know if I would still hold it as highly as to call it the match of the year. It still was an amazing match. Don't get me wrong here, but as I just tried to find out through my notes and while I was rambling on here, I think I like the October one a bit better.
When was the last time you watched the October one?
I think it must have been also close to a year ago, but I didn't rewatch it for this specific episode now.
The trouble I have is remembering, and it happens a lot with the big New Japan matches, remembering which one is which.
Yeah.
Like, they are generally, I find, all of a very high level, but none of them have anything distinct about them for me that helps me remember which is which.
I can get that, especially on the big series. If it's the first time two guys wrestled together, if that is fantastic, then that will stick in my head. Ishii versus Shibata, for example, that is tattooed on the inside of my brain. Ishii versus Tanahashi, that is one I can name probably half the spots, and I love that. But you're right, things like the Tanahashi Okada series, the Okada Omega series, those kind of series, I can't really tell them apart on paper.
With Tanahashi and Okada, there is a very slight development in all of these matches. For example, when we go to this April 7 match, we mentioned that Tanahashi was going for the Rainmaker for Okada's move early in the match. In their G1 match on August 10, 2013, Tanahashi actually was able to do the Rainmaker close to the finish of the match. On October 14, 2013, there was another attempt of Tanahashi to do the Rainmaker, but Okada was able to hit it. Tanahashi, though, he kind of kicked out of the Rainmaker for the first time ever. But due to Okada once again being so hurt on his elbow, there was no real direct cover in that situation. So that's the development from April to October.
Yeah. And as we pointed out before, like, one of the unfortunate consequences of doing this show is, unless we choose to go and find all of this stuff, we're just like parachuted into a match.
Yes.
Like a moment in time and kind of, and I think like a mark of a must see match is how well it holds up without context.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, the only context I had going in was that video package at the beginning.
Right. And just like you pointed out, this one completely works out if you just watch this one match. And that's not the quality that a lot of matches have, that you watch out of context, because you're just missing the emotional attachment to these. Mm. But as you watch these two come through the curtain, you immediately like know what these guys are up for. Mm. And you get a glimpse of it in the early stages of the match where they try to top one another, when they try to outdo one another. Yeah. That's really simple.
Yeah. Mark, where do you stand on this one?
As I said earlier, it's like the other three matches with Tanahashi that we've covered on the podcast, I've called all of them must-see. On my first rewatch of this, I wasn't so sure that I would call it must-see. On the second time, and paying attention to all of the details on Okada, and yes, my hand fetishism, yeah, I think this is must-see. I think the... Strigger just waving his hands at the camera for those.
Careful, he'll get the next flight to Germany.
You won't please be safe. Please no.
Now, I love this. And the thing is, Okada is a guy that often, I think, people often give him a lot of criticism for various things, like selling, for example. His selling here is amazing. It's a masterpiece.
It's flawless. There's no holes that you can find in the selling. Mm. There's no dramatic adrenaline rush that he goes into. He just hurt his arm the entire time.
Mm. Yep. And as I said, even if people say, well, he hit the tombstone, he did his submission, he's not using his usual grip. He's basically compensating at all times. It's an amazing selling performance. I'd say there's probably very few that we've covered in this podcast that I would put up there with this. Weirdly enough, I think Kenny Omega's leg selling wasn't as consistent, but during the Naito match, that's another one that stood out to me. But it's like the storytelling of this, it's, as you say, it's simple, but it builds and... The finishing stretch doesn't feel convoluted and overdancey as we often got towards the end of the peak New Japan run. It was what I think of as a classic Okada finishing stretch with two scoops of logic on the side. The constant aggression, the constant cockiness, both guys are absolute... Tanahashi is an absolute master at just... You can read what his face and you can just see exactly... Yeah. His whole emotional storyline. It's like, yes, the Lucha submissions kind of bring it down a little bit, but still, it's a fantastic match. I think it does suffer a little from this high ceiling of New Japan had in that how can you call matches like this must-see when there's like another six or seven on this level?
Yeah, yeah. They're kind of like, they're kind of a victim of being too good. I will say, I don't think the Lucha submissions bring it down at all. It's young Okada going back to what he was first trained in to try and find something. He's like, I need to hurt this guy's neck. I remember this hold I was taught in Mexico that hurts a guy's neck. Mm. You know, yeah. I think that's absolutely fine. I think this match is excellent. Like, it's a proper back and forth struggle between equally matched opponents with an easy to follow story, internal logic, tremendous performances. I think the pace is superb.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
And importantly, they got out at the peak. There was no false finish and then five more minutes of stuff while the crowd cooled down. Like, Sumo Hall could not have got any louder than they were at the end of this match. I loved it. I think this is excellent, excellent stuff.
And to add on that, what you just said about the level where they finished at 31 minutes, just very close to the 30 minutes that they basically have set.
Yeah, I'm about to ruin New Japan for you. Do you notice that a lot of finishes come within 2 minutes of a time call?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just watch Tetsu and Naito matches. They are always 28 minutes long. Yeah. What I was about to say is that this match has no redundant moments. In contrast to other Okada title matches, there is no 10-minute portion of the match that you can just wave away. There is a constant level, just like you said, constant level of aggression, the constant level of pace that is slowly but surely building to this dramatic finish.
Yeah, this is also before he finds his pattern, though, which if you're going to have longevity as a wrestler, particularly doing high-level long matches, I think you have to find a pattern. Otherwise, your body is just going to fall apart. And I think what Okada gets criticized for is the pattern.
And that's a great criticism. I just can't say anything against that, because that's just the way that he's been for a long, long time. But much like you said,
yeah,
in the end, he still is one of the best big match wrestlers in the world, because he's able to just put these matches together. Mm. That, yes, they are patterned for a long, long part of these matches, but you always get a little bit of a switch in the end of these matches. Mm. And you always get drawn into the level of performance that Okada puts on, because he's just the guy that just draws any attention onto him.
I have seen Okada in the back room of a bar wrestling Austin Aries, and I have seen Okada in front of 40,000 people in the Tokyo Dome, and both times, so I got to see him in the big setting doing the big things, and I got to see how intricate his work is standing 8 feet away from the ring, and he is one of the best I've ever seen in front of my own eyes. He is still one half of the best match I've ever seen live. Phenomenal performer.
Like, what was that match?
That would be the Kota Ibushi match from Wrestle Kingdom 14. Incredible. And that came immediately after Will Ospreay versus Hiromu Takahashi, which up until that point was the best match I'd ever seen. So, quick note, a couple of weeks ago when we talked about The Rock versus Steve Austin, we noted that The Rock was 28 and headlining his third WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Okada is 25 in this match.
Yeah.
He has been at it a lot longer than Dwayne Johnson had, though. This match, 5 stars in The Observer, 9.69 currently on Cage Match. Tanahashi won Observer Wrestler of the Year. Okada was number two. They were respectively numbers 1 and 3 in Most Outstanding. Tanahashi was most charismatic. They won Feud of the Year, and this match was the Wrestling Observer Match of the Year for 2013. An excellent, excellent showing. Strigger, yes. Thank you so much for joining us again. Please let everybody know what is going on with Eastern Lariat, where they can find you if you want to be found, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Eastern Lariat, we recently had another episode, Dylan Fox and I. Dylan has been on 2 or 3 shows.
He's a regular guest.
He's a regular guest, yes, of course. We recently did an episode last week, as we're recording this on September 18. We talked about...
Oh, don't give it away.
Well, I'm trying to put this into context here.
Sure.
We did an episode the week before that, actually, because we talked about the N1, about All Japan Right Now, and about Dragon Gate. We always try to cover what's on the menu in Japanese wrestling as the big shows are happening. We also talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, but we mostly try to shed a light on the other promotions in Japanese Pro Wrestling and try to look at them on a grander scheme. We backed away from doing match by match reviews. We really like to look at the individual performers in and on the roster and try to digest the promotion in and of itself more and more as we continue to do our show. We've been doing this for 8 years now, so that's quite a long time, actually.
You need to mix it up a little bit if you've been doing it that long.
Yeah, we try to mix it up a little bit. Of course, I am working on Pure Love. I just think that the Japanese are well deserving of their holidays, but whenever there is a Japanese holiday like there is today, I really cringe because it's a Monday, I have to work, and there are a zillion shows that I need to put on Pure Love on Cage Match as well. So
I'm going to Japan, and I will be in Japan during one of the bank holiday Mondays. And my God, the amount of choice that I could go to is there's like across Japan, I think there's nearly 20 shows that day.
I think Isami Kodaka might have worked 5 matches on this day. I'm not entirely sure, but he might have. I think Fumino Ueabe worked 10.
I will quickly say,
yep.
that puralove.de plus Google Translate has been invaluable on every one of my trips to Japan. Like planning out what I'm going to see and what's happening. If you're going to Japan, you absolutely need to use this to find shows to go to.
Yeah, my first trip probably wouldn't have happened when it happened if I hadn't have spent hours going over Puralove and basically trying to work out the patterns of when shows were to work out the best timing. So yeah, that's greatly appreciated.
And on the topic of longevity, we've been doing this since 2006. This website has been around, and it looks like it, because we are not really able to like design a website, so we're just using the one that we have.
Function over form. As long as it works, that's the important thing.
Absolutely.
Jay from Dragon Gate pointed out that his first Dragon Gate website was done on a Dreamcast browser. It's like what works.
Fantastic. Yeah, so also please check out cagematch.net. We're in the last couple of years, we've put together a really international team. We've switched most of our internal communication over to English, because it turned out that we just, for the amount of information we put on, we just ran out of people in Germany to ask to join CageMesh. So we branched out internationally, and I think we've put together quite the team as of right now. So I'm really, really proud of what all the team members at CageMesh are doing right now. And as we continue to get more shout outs from people in the wrestling world, that's always very validating, of course.
It's a fantastic resource.
And any socials you want to put out?
Yes, of course. You can follow me at Striga, Striga, on Twitter. I'm on Blue Sky as of a couple of weeks ago as well, but I'm not really using it right now because Twitter is still around. So I put every of my thoughts about pro wrestling on Twitter, and that's where I can be found. And I guess that's all. Eastern Arid, Cage Match, Puralove, Striga.
Excellent. The big four. The four pillars. Yes. As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and much more. We are at mustseematches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. We have a Discord, bit.ly/mustseematchesdiscord. You can come and have a chat over there and watch me fail to live stream editing episodes. On Twitter, I am at Kieran Edits, and Mark is...
at monkey_buckles.
Very sorry to disappoint you, Striga, but he got it right.
He got it right.
Next week, a match so big we need two guests. Andy Ogden and Eddie Sideburns will both return.
Jesus Christ.
You haven't know what we're talking about yet. The match on the list with the lowest attendance. From the BT Sports Studios, NXT UK episode 116 on the 29th of October 2020, it is Volta versus Ilya Dragunov.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly. We'll see you next week. Thank you very much and goodbye.